You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro from SASFIN in Johannesburg. David, there's been an awful lot of results out recently, and today is no exception, of course. We had Barlow World for a start coming out with numbers. What have you made of, first of all, the ones we've had out today and the ones that have preceded today's results?
Yeah, you know, Barlow World is a fairly good number, helped by upbeat mining numbers, particularly in Russia and in Southern Africa. They're well placed there. They're equipment suppliers. So it's a fairly respectable result. There's one thing that characterizes all the numbers that are coming out.
Yes.
And without exception, everyone points to difficult conditions, particularly when we talk about the consumer in South Africa and conditions here. So I think in Barlow's case, they're, in fact, they're even looking at a Mongolian equipment producer. They made a bid for the Wagner Asia. I don't know the business, but, you know, Mongolia is still a very big mining area, very close to China, very close to Russia in between. So they're okay. You know, they're not a bad business. I haven't been attracted to them, I think, largely because of the inconsistencies that we see in mining, and also because of their exposure to logistics and motor vehicle sales here. But credit to them, they're bumbling along. The shares are up. I think in this kind of market, we're tempted to look at anything that could give us a positive return. Mm.
Yeah, Barlow World shares currently around about 2% higher as we pre-record this interview. One that's not 2% higher is Pioneer Food Group Limited, down nearly 12%. What a disastrous set of numbers.
It is a disaster. And, you know, I think along with it, a lot of other food companies have come down. I think what caught us by surprise was the very high levels of inflation. And to try and put it into one soundbite, I mean, they really sell cereals. They sell maize. That's where they make. In other words, they sell bread and very basic foodstuffs, rice, etc. And what's happened there is there's been downward pressure on their pricing, upward pressure on their costs. You know, which is unusual. And I think that's squeezed their margins and really kind of squeezed them out of business. It's obviously by the price reaction. It took the market by surprise. We knew that these businesses were a bit tight. You know, we've been looking at Tiger Brands and various other companies in that area, and we knew things are not great. It's been a very difficult situation. If you look at Astral's numbers, which are chicken producers, or they sell poultry, the same thing there. We've seen food prices go up. You know, we've seen their input costs go up and the sale of birds go down. So it's been a kind of trend, and we're seeing it now with produced food, with bread, with maize and, maize meal and other products. So not a good result. Shares down 11%, but it's taken a whole lot of other shares down with it. And it's, Tiger Brands down about 3%, AVI down a similar amount of as well. Overall, not a good day for our market.
Not really, no. Adcorp's numbers came out as well. They're down 1.5% at the moment. Mm. It says here, underlying earnings before interest, etc., EBITDA, for the year increased by 34%. Net profit after tax increased by 147%. There's obviously got to do with some acquisitions there, because these numbers can't be organic.
No, I've lost touch with them, to be honest. I used to follow the company quite closely, but it's changed in character so much. I've lost my feel for them, Adcorp. So I don't even know what they do. And the last time I knew, they were heading off to Australia. So I'm not even quite sure where they placed anymore. but anyway, you've alerted me to this. I've still got some time. I'll have a closer look to you in the course of the day.
Okay, jolly good. Revenue for the year decreased by 2%. So there's obviously something going on here. There's some creative
they
accounting.
You remember they used to do all the adverts in the Sunday Times for staff, and they used to place a lot of blue collar people, and they were considered labor brokers and came under a lot of pressure at one stage. And I suppose they're the kind of people who do very well in a very strong bull market where you're looking for staff, which is not exactly what's happening here. I think, if anything, it's a very difficult situation here.
Aspen's been in the news recently. I mean, it disposed of its business that it has been trying to dispose of for ages. It's also divested itself of a portfolio of prescription and OTC products, it says here on the stock exchange, new service products in Australia to Mylan. Right, so all the stuff that it's buying that is now non-core, it's selling. But if you have a look at the purchase price, and then you look at what they're selling it for, you say to yourself, goodness me, you were really sort of quite gung-ho and reckless with your purchases all those years ago.
Well, I think what's happened to them is you know, this was all part of a policy to diversify out of generics in South Africa. And I think they've been squeezed. They're squeezed by high debt. And have to sell what they do not consider to be their core businesses. But I think the market, you see, if you look at the market's still not responding to it. Yes, it's alleviating some of their debt issues. But I think you'll only see a turnaround when they finally start to make, when operational profits increase and they start to do better from a revenue point of view. So I still think, yes, we're relieved. It's good that they're doing these things, but I mean, it's still some time, some time away before you can call the bottom. They're in the 105 area, but unless you get a good set of numbers, I can't see them going to, I don't think they'll run up to 120, 130. I don't think they'll see a big run.
Richemont's numbers, Investec numbers, and Spar's numbers. Let's have a look at those three, which have come out since we last spoke.
Yeah,
I have to start with Investec because the new, relatively new CEO, joint CEO that is, Hendrik de Toey, who used to be inextricably linked with Investec Asset Management, which they're demerging from in July. I think he's a good CEO, and I just think that there's some potential to be unlocked there, if you like.
Yeah, you know, I think Hendrik couldn't wait for Stephen to resign and for Bernard Kanter and Stephen Kossoff to resign so that he can actually implement the split away from the bank, because I think he's been one of the main earners for the bank, and he steadied them, and it was his division, the asset management side, that really, I think, got them through the difficult times. And he wants to be on his own. You know, I don't think he wants to be dragged down by the difficulties of running a bank. Asset management is a clean business. You know, you produce a product and you go out and sell it, and in comes money. You know, so clean margins. You don't have any debt problems. You know, you don't have the issues that that Investec faced after the crisis in 2007-2008.
Yeah.
So the problem is that you do reduce the size of the bank considerably. I would imagine on a easy to analyze split would be a third to two thirds. In other words, Hendrik's business, probably 30, 35, maybe even up to 40% of the value. The other side, the bank, 60%. So one of the highlights was the UK business seemed to be doing okay on the banking side, despite Brexit. I think where the problems were in South Africa, and that's understandable. Very, very tough conditions here. And Investec. How do they make their money? They lend money to rich people, to their rich clients. Clients are those who want to gear themselves and build property and buy golf courses, etc. That was where their business was. They don't have... they always focus at the top end of the market, richer clients, etc. So they haven't got the benefits of First Rand or a Standard Bank or a Nedbank, who has people coming off the streets depositing their salaries and, drawing and using credit cards and various products like that. So I don't find it. They haven't done anything for about 10 years. I'm not sure they are going to do anything. I don't know what their new policy is. It's very difficult.
I think with Hendrik at the helm, there's something going to happen, and the spin-off of asset management is going to be an interesting one, and the new name of the asset management company is going to be very interesting as well. And the interesting thing was, Greg Davies from Kratos Capital, who I speak to every day, and you see him running around occasionally in Johannesburg. He's got a slip. He's got some kind of document which shows his father, B.C. Davies, the head of the stockbroking company, B.C. Davies. It was a financing slip from Investec for a BMW 728i from the early 1980s. And that's the sort of person they were financing. Yeah, exactly. Doctors and dentists and professionals. Exactly. to buy assets. And that's how they started.
Absolutely right. That's their business model. Mm. And I think they played that out and faced tough competition from RMBs and other businesses. But that's where they made their mark. And in a similar way, they would find entrepreneurs or alternatively businessmen who wanted to buy properties and invest in other areas or other asset classes. They came to their assistance. But I think that's played out. You know, that's exactly what they were. That's strange. Yeah.
David, Spar came out with a set of results as well last week, and I spoke to Graham O'Connor, the CEO, and what struck me about this was the first time for many, many months, I saw a prospect statement, which is, you've always taught me to go straight to the prospect statement before you actually have a look back. So it's almost like you're reading a newspaper from the sports page right through to the front page. And it was, we think things are going to get better. Essentially, that's what it says. And I don't know. I mean, did you agree with that?
They've got a good business. I think they're doing pretty well. They're one of the few businesses that have gone offshore that are making progress there in Ireland and in the UK, the south of the UK, I think it is, in Switzerland. Yeah. And I think they're now going into Poland. I know very little about Poland, the prospects there, although Mark Wayner from Redefine is incredibly positive about what's happening in Eastern Europe, you know, the quality of the economy there. They like Australia, have certainly Poland, haven't seen a recession. And so I think he, and you know, you can't fault him for his operations here as well. Very, very solid and steady. So, you know, I think that's where the positive, you know, where he gets that positive spin from. They're good businesses. Problems are that he faces intense competition here. As things get tighter here, so you tend to discount, cut your margins, and that. And I don't think he can, regardless of how good he is, kind of combat that or overcome that. You've got to be pretty smart, but a very, very good business.
Let's talk about retailers if we can, because we've got the Monetary Policy Committee meeting coming up. It's a 2-day meeting, Wednesday and Thursday of this week. The South African Reserve Bank will decide upon South African interest rates on Thursday afternoon, or rather we'll know about it on Thursday afternoon. And the retail sector, what would you do? Yeah, Pick and Pay, pretty good results. You've got Spar, well, they were okay. Checkers has been under pressure. You got Clicks, Dis-Chem. Dis-Chem's numbers disappointed the market. If you had to have a retailer, if you absolutely had to have one, or if you do have them, David, and tell us if you do, what would you go for?
I wouldn't go for anything. I think they're very pricey relative to the kind of growth that we're getting. So you have to make a call on one of those. So I can't find good value in. Lindsay, what we're seeing is that it seems to be, you know, wherever you look, and I always look at charts in terms of saying, okay, what does it show me in terms of, you know, buying and selling people, where they're buying and selling. And it's very difficult to read. What they do, what the charts do show you is that the prices are just, or companies are trading in a very narrow range and just drifting sideways. There's been big turnarounds in Pick and Pay, I think, at the expense of ShopRite. ShopRite's still a very solid operation. Spar, a good operation. If I had to choose, it would certainly be the ones you've mentioned, whether it's a Spar, a Pick and Pay, a ShopRite, or alternatively, the beauty products, retailers, Clicks, or even Dis-Chem, although I think Dis-Chem came under a lot of pressure because of strike action. But Clicks seems to be the one that's a standout performer. And maybe if Pick and Pay can continue, but I've avoided all of them at this stage. There's nothing there that drags me in.
What does drag you in? Anything at the moment? I mean, are you getting dragged in? Are you looking at the overseas markets, for example, and saying the trade wars and the Iranian situation, the trade wars are one thing, but they've been rumbling on for weeks and weeks. In fact, it's not weeks and weeks, it's months and months and months. It seems to me that there must be serious problems. If you can't sit down for a week with 100 people on either side and say, okay, we'll do this, and it keeps on getting postponed, there must be some serious cultural and ideological differences between the two parties. That's the first thing. But that goes on and people are just being numbed. It's like Brexit. We don't care anymore. But the other thing is the Iran situation. And Mr. Trump really has got a bee in his bonnet about this country.
Well, I don't think he's got to be in the bonnet. I think it's his two advisors, Pompeo and Bolton.
Yeah,
you know, who are two hawks who I don't know what their end game is, and they've probably been influencing him. But it can turn very, very ugly.
Yes,
you know what always worries me when a nation is being pushed into a corner, and there's no way out. Remember that. It's not that they can negotiate their way out, because America watches who's trading with them and takes action against those nations as well. So, you know, if the Iranian economy really starts to collapse, then there's no telling what they can do. And, you know, they're a naughty nation. They can do anything. They've got the weapons and they've got the influence. And this could be a real powder keg in that area in the Middle East.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure the Saudis are worried about, and so are other countries. So, yeah, it's that's among other things. And then you mentioned the trade wars. Of course, you called it ideological standoff. Two different countries. The Chinese consider Americans as spent force, tired, whatever they are, a former superpower. And there's similar suspicions by the Americans of the Chinese, you know, that steal their ideas, they're regressive, they're imperialist, whatever it is. Mm. And Trump, as he said overnight, you know, they're not going to become a superpower under his watch. That's crazy.
That is mad. Know, that's mad talk.
You know, in other words,
it's so inflammatory.
It is inflammatory. You know, I'm not going to let you be the superpower. You know, I'm going to bully you into submission.
Mm.
And the today, your trade links are so, I mean, the networks are so involved and everybody's so linked. The whole of Europe, Japan, wherever you are, you're linked into both nations in your not only logistics, in your supply chain. So what's happening now is there's a huge amount of uncertainty, and all the tech companies that supply whoever supplies him under severe pressure. So the NASDAQ is taking a knock because of that. It's Apple and Qualcomm and all these businesses as well.
Yep.
In Europe, it's in your part of the world, it's ASML, which supplies the lithography, I think it is. It's,
you're quite right.
Use them to make. Yeah. Well, everybody's under pressure, so. It's a crazy situation, and Carrot Top is just unpredictable. He's unplayable. You don't know what next is going to come out of his mouth.
Yeah, you're quite right, David. We have to finish on football now. It's always a sad time of the year for me. Obviously, we've got the June the 1st to look forward to, the UEFA Champions League final in Madrid between Tottenham Hotspurs and Liverpool. Extraordinarily. And we've got Arsenal versus Chelsea in Baku, the capital of Azerbaijan, which I think is coming up the Thursday before. Is it this Thursday? Anyway.
It's a Thursday. It's the
Thursday week, maybe.
27. What is that? Yeah. Thursday week.
Exactly. But I've been looking back at this season, and this has probably been the season of the most excitement in football, English and European football, that we've ever seen. I mean, just looking about it as a silly thing called the FA Cup. Watford versus Wolves, the semi-final. Watford 2-0 down with a couple of minutes to go, and then they equalise, and then they go through, and then Watford go on to lose 6-0 to Manchester City, the extraordinary Manchester City. Liverpool versus Barcelona, 3-0 down against probably the best team in the world, but obviously not the best team in the world, because then Liverpool turned them over 4-0. Extraordinary game. Even more extraordinary, I thought, was Ajax versus Spurs. Spurs 2-0 down and 3-0 down on aggregate at half time, and then coming back and winning with the last kick of the match. And even more so, which is something that many of the mainstream listeners might not know about, was Leeds versus Derby County in the semi-final of the Championship. The same situation, 3-0 down, and came back to win the blooming thing. It was incredible. What a season it's been.
It has been. What staggered me is how professional soccer players with three goals in the bag, can just fall apart.
Yes.
And how they get rattled you know, and can't control themselves or can't put a team together or haven't got a game plan that can prevent or stop those kind of losses. Look, I'm an Arsenal man, and for us, we've had many of those results where we've been 4-0 up at halftime and end up drawing the game or losing it. So I know what it's like, and you can actually psychologically feel the team crumble. You know, they panic, and I think that's what happened to Ajax. I think Barcelona never turned up to the other game. But sure, I know. But still, it has been a phenomenal season. And I like Pep. I think he's done incredibly well for Man City. You know, hey, brilliant.
Did you see him after the game? Everyone else is celebrating. And yeah, there's the ticker tape parade and everything, and the cup had been presented when they beat Watford 6-0 in the FA Cup final on Saturday. And then he stood and he gave Raheem Sterling a grilling about something. There's a really good piece of footage. What were you doing? They just won 6-0, and he's still giving him a grilling, telling him you should have done this, you should have done that. Pep is a maniac. He's fantastic.
Yeah, but look what he's achieved, you know, at whichever club he has been there, whether it's been Barcelona, Bayern, or now Man City. So he knows how to manage a club, and credit to him.
Yes, indeed.
It's there. The evidence is there.
And credit to you, David Shapiro, as always, on a Monday. You speak to us, and that was Shapiro World with David Shapiro from Sasfin in Johannesburg. That podcast was proudly brought to you in association with sharenet.co.za.